IndieCast is presented by Uproxx's Indie Mixtape.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to IndieCast. On this show, we talk about the biggest indie news of the week, we review albums, and we hash out trends. In this episode, we talk about Waxahachie, Adrian Linker, Rosalie, Bruno Mars, patio music, all the best topics. My name is Stephen Hayden, and I'm joined by my friend and co-host. He's not at all bothered that he wasn't interviewed for Slate's Pitchfork Oral History, Ian Cohen. Ian, how are you?
Yeah, actually, you can put in the newspaper that I got mad. I'm seeing some names on that where I've done more Das Racist, I've done more reviews of Das Racist side projects than some of these people have done things total. Step up your game. Review a couple of Waves Electronics projects before you speak on the history. Nah. Also, Dan Lesak of Dan Lesak for Scroobius Pip fame. I gave that project, which I haven't thought about it in a long time. It sounds sort of like The Streets if they were more concerned about conscious rap. I gave them a 0.2 back in 2008, and I do appreciate how that guy got a line in the oral history where he said that review actually did a lot of good things for their career, more so than
wow.
Wait, so
they interviewed Dan Lesak, but not Ian Cohen for the Pitchfork Oral History?
Yeah, history will absolve
Slate.
Me. Yeah.
Slate. Okay, so if you don't know what we're talking about, this week, Slate.com, they published an oral history of Pitchfork, and they interviewed, I believe, somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 people, including musicians, commentators, as well as some people who actually worked at Pitchfork. And look, I mean, they obviously put a lot of work in. They interviewed 40 people. Mm-hmm. There were three different writers on this. It's a fairly long piece. It's fairly comprehensive. I do have to say, as I read it, I thought it was interesting who they interviewed and who they did not interview. I feel like there were people that could have been interviewed that maybe should have been interviewed, and they weren't in there. And I'll include you in that. I also want to shout out one of my other podcast husbands, Rob Mitchum, who's written many reviews. He brought dad rock into the lexicon because of his Wilco Sky Blue Sky review. He's not in there. And there's other people in there there's other people who are not in there that I think have had a big part of Pitchfork's history. And look, you never know. Sometimes people aren't in there because they didn't want to be interviewed. Maybe they were approached and they turned them down. But I don't know. I just thought that was interesting. Some interesting choices. There were writers in there. I mean, to say nothing about you, there's writers in there who have written fewer reviews than I have. And I have no role in Pitchfork's history. And I'm like, I've written more reviews than you. What are you doing in here? So I thought that was interesting. The other thing I thought was interesting, and this isn't just Slate doing this, there seems to be this belief that Pitchfork is already shut down. We have to eulogize Pitchfork. It's like, if you go to Pitchfork, they're still putting out several reviews every day. They're publishing features. They're doing basically what they've always done, but with a much smaller staff. God bless the people who are working there still. Very trying circumstances. I have some idea of what that's like. When I was at Grantland and Bill Simmons got fired, it's kind of a similar thing. You have people on the internet acting like you're already dead. And it's like, no, we're not dead. We're trying to keep this body going here. You're not helping by doing this. So, this impulse to eulogize a site that's still going and hopefully will continue to carry on and, thrive in the future, it seems a little premature to me. We may have to do another oral history of Pitchfork.
The oral history of the oral history.
And maybe you can get into that one. Maybe we can put Dan Lesak to the side for a second. Get some Ian Cohen love in a Pitchfork Oral History. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I feel like we have to talk about one of my favorite music-related stories of all time. And this, well, not of all time, but of recent times, yeah. I'll say. And this has nothing to do with indie rock. I'm sorry, but there's a story this week about Bruno Mars, the pint-sized pop star that we all know and love, allegedly owing $50 million, that's $50 million, in gambling debts to, I think it was the MGM Grand in Las Vegas.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, and I think he's doing a residency there, or either at that hotel or some other hotel. And look, we should say that the hotel came out and said that the story isn't true, and I think Bruno Mars also denied it. But I'm sorry, if you walk around with a fedora and a pencil-thin mustache, a story about you owing $50 million in gambling debts is like 1,000 times more credible. You know, like the pencil-thin mustache is such a giveaway. It's very suspicious. I don't know. This kind of relates in my mind to the Shohei Ohtani story, too, going around this week about... And I guess we're going to do a little sports cast here. It's like a mini sports cast, but
people love it. Did
you see the story? Like, his interpreter got fired because there was like some sort of like wiring of money to an offshore bookmaker. And now people are, you know, very reasonably questioning, is this related to Shohei Ohtani? Is he betting on sports? Do we have a Pete Rose situation possibly brewing here? Is gambling just ruining everything in the world? Are we just becoming like a gambleholic society? Because gambling is really permeated sports. I mean, I wish it would permeate music criticism. I would love some DraftKings money. Maybe we can get them to post odds on the fantasy draft, fantasy albums draft. That'd be amazing for us. DraftKings, please reach out to us. We want to get in this corruption that's taking over the world. But I don't know. I hate gambling personally. I like watching gambling, like poker movies and, you know, that kind of thing. But I hate gambling myself. Like, are you a gambler? Are you going to be owing $50 million? Am I going to have to bail you out at some point, Ian?
Yeah, we're going to have to like go on Patreon and put out like new episodes every single day for, you know, if one of us catches the gambling bug. But I mean, like, I hate gambling too. Like, I am way too anxious about money at all times. That being said, you know, not to skip ahead to one of our mailbag questions, but I'm going to Europe this fall with my wife, and that's only because I won my fantasy league, which I guess you would call that gambling, but it's like a thing I do like once per year. Yeah,
Wait, you won enough money? Wait, you won enough money to go to Europe in your fantasy league?
Yeah, Jaden Reed, man. Like,
what?
Jaden Reed.
What?
Look, it's enough to like buy to mostly cover the flights.
Jeez Louise, man. This is crazy. That's gambling, my friend.
Yeah.
If you're winning airfare money to Europe, you are gambling. You are entering Bruno Mars. That's like entry level Bruno Mars.
Yeah, I feel like we... You know how, like, I guess 1 or 2 years ago, there would be, like, either a documentary or, like, a mock or, like, a biopic about, like, the opioid epidemic? Like, I feel like in about 5 to 10 years, we're going to see that with, you know, DraftKings or any of these other micro gambling sites. Like, I really do think it is a plague upon our society. Also, like with Bruno Mars, I mean, does the fact that like it was $50 million make it less believable or more believable? Because, you know, if it was like 3 or 4 million, like if it was that, like that guy might be dead already. I don't think you can walk around owing 4 million, like, or even like $500,000 worth of gambling debts in Las Vegas and still walk around like with, you know, both of your thumbs.
Well, I mean, look, I don't know anything about the inner workings of casinos. I'm purely speculating here. I mean, if he's a whale,
yeah,
so to speak, and I know that term because I've seen Casino 50 times, but if Bruno Mars is a whale, maybe they let him run up $50 million because maybe in the past he's won comparable amounts of money. So they're just like, oh, this guy's swinging back and forth. It seems like a pretty big tab to run up. And again, the casino denied it. I'm sure the casino doesn't want it out there that they're like giving a celebrity $50 million worth of rope.
Yeah,
you know,
a gambling term. You know the deal. I mean, you've probably seen Rounders enough times.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, the gambling thing is crazy because, you know, when I'm not recording podcasts, I am listening to exclusively sports podcasts. Like, I don't listen to music podcasts ever. Mm-hmm. I only listen to sports podcasts in my free time. and they are all, it's just wall-to-wall gambling ads. And you have the gambling ads, you have the hosts, they gamble too, they're giving gambling tips. It really does feel like you're in a schoolyard and there's like just 50 drug dealers surrounding you, giving you free drugs. Yeah. You know, like you're a kid and all these drug dealers, they're trying to turn you into like a crack addict or something. That's what it feels like listening to these sports podcasts. It's not going to work because I hate gambling. Mm. I have personal experience with gambling addicts in my family. Mm. Not a good scene, really, to be around. But again, if DraftKings wants to come in and sponsor our fantasy albums draft, I do like money. Yes. So if you want to give us money, that'd be amazing. Speaking of which,
yes,
fantasy albums draft. Let's do the update here. I'm angry. I'm angry because I can see my season. It's not technically over, but it's basically over. So the new Waxahachie album is out today. It's called Tiger's Blood. And that was your number one pick. Mm. Very good number one pick. It's currently at number 91. Or it has 91 score on Metacritic. I had Julia Holter, which, did that drop today?
Yeah, that's also out today. And that one's putting up big numbers, too. So, I mean, that was a valiant effort.
It was. I got an 89 currently on Metacritic with Julia Holter. But right now, our combined score, I have 424, you have 353. You have one album left, and that's also out today. Mm-hmm. That's Jiln.
Jalen.
Jalen.
Is yeah, it Jalen? It's Jlin. She's a footwork producer. Got Philip Glass on her new album.
That's like an optical illusion because it looks like J, because like the L and the I, it looks like Jiln.
Yes.
So it's Jalen though.
Yes.
Jalen.
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, Jalen's gonna mop the floor with me. Because you only need a 72 to overtake me. Jalen's going to sail through with that. What do you think she's like? What would you guess would be her Metacritic score? We're going like 85, 86.
Yeah, I think that's like a floor. And just to put this into perspective, I'm looking at Metacritic right now. And like, I'm going to read you some of the albums that have done worse than 72 in the past couple of weeks. Justin Timberlake and Bleachers. That's it. Like the new Dandy Warhols album is clearing a 72.
God. So it's going to be a rout.
Yes.
I mean, you're going to beat me by like probably 13, 14 points, which means I'm 0-2 in our fantasy drafts. And I'm looking at my team here. I mean, I think I picked well. I mean, I guess Katie Kirby was the miss because I think she was high 70s.
81.
81. Okay. So, I mean, she did well too. I mean, I guess The Smile was about the same.
That's an 83.
You just hit really high. Mm-hmm. You just hit really high. Like, I think I did well, but you were just really strong. Even, like, I wonder what you would have done if you had kept the Jazz album.
Probably about the same.
Because, like, what did you replace the Jazz album with?
I believe that was Jalen.
Okay, so Jalen, so we'll see. Mm-hmm. But it's all going to be academic because you would have won with VJ Eiler. You're going to win with Jalen. God damn, I'm firing my GM. My GM is out. I'm firing myself. I'm going to put in a new GM because I guess we'll pick next week for the, the spring.
Oh, shit.
Fantasy albums draft. I got to get my shit together here. I'm like really upset with myself. I thought I could win this quarter and tie it up, but I'm 0-2. All right. My GM's out of here.
Yeah, maybe we need to crowdsource, you know, for the next one. Like instead of mailbags, you're just gonna like kind of search for the next like Sam Hinkie or whatever. But you did like you
I'm not at crowdsourcing yet. That's just like desperation at that point. If I go to 0-3, maybe I'll crowdsource. But I feel like I can pull it together for the spring quarter.
Yeah, I mean, these were good picks. It's just that, like, the ones I did like, 3 or 4 points better each time, which, you know, like, that adds up. So, you draft one Katie Kirby, you know, The Smile. I think Faye Webster, this was probably her least, you know, least strong performance, but it was still good. It's just that, yeah, like,
that's true.
Yeah, it's just that I just had, and also, like, you know, Mannequin Pussy, like Julia Holter, those are like best of the year type scores. Yeah, it's just that Yard Act did well for me. You know, Kaliuchis did really well for me. I wouldn't throw out the blueprint just yet. You know, I think that maybe next time, depending on like where the draft picks fall, you know, I think you're still in the mix. You know, right now you're just looking at, you're like the Pistons to my, you know, early 90s Bulls. Wait a minute. No, I got that all wrong. You know, the Bull, you had to beat. I've already forgotten The Last Dance. You're like the Trailblazers during the Jordan era.
See, look at you. You're just comforting me. This is how pathetic I am right now. Like, you're not even enjoying your victory. You are trying to comfort me. No, I know. Look, I feel good about my performance. I'm just a little upset that I'm going to get blown out here. I feel like my team was better than that. I'm a little stunned. I'm going to fire my GM, and I'm going to rehire my GM because it's me. I'm just going to fire my GM, though, out of anger for the week, and then I'll rehire him in time for next week's draft. But yeah, congratulations, Ian. You did it.
Yes.
I mean, look, Jalen might fail. Jalen might put up Timberlake numbers. You never know.
That's not happening.
It could happen. It's not over till it's over, but it's probably over.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the big album this week, your anchor, your number one pick. By the way, I think you've had the number one pick in the first two drafts. I think you had it in the first one, too.
Probably.
Because you took Taylor Swift.
No, didn't I take Sufjan with the first pick?
Oh, that's right.
Because I thought you would.
That's right. I took Taylor Swift. Did I take Taylor Swift? God, I can't.
No, I definitely had Taylor Swift. Okay. And you thought that was just like a brilliant sort of like picking Giannis out of Greece in the second round. Or like Nikola Jokic type maneuver.
Well, I would have taken that, though. Was like I think you must have had the second pick. And you got two picks there. That must have been it. God, who can remember?
Yeah.
We need like an IndyCast historian to revisit that episode and tell us what the order was. Because I would have definitely taken Taylor Swift. That was on my board, but I don't remember.
IndyCast in the 2023 redraftables. That's us.
Yeah, IndyCast historians. If you can revisit that episode, send us an email. Let us know what we did. Because frankly, we record these episodes and I immediately delete them from my memory. I don't remember what we say. So if someone could do that, that would be great. Let's talk about the big album of the week, the big album on your fantasy team. And that album is Tiger's Blood by Waxahachie. It's the first Waxahachie album in 4 years, following up her very successful and acclaimed 2020 album, St. Cloud. And if you like St. Cloud, you're going to like this record. Has the same producer, Brad Cook. Has that same kind of wised up country rock sound to it. I think it's a really strong record. MJ Lenderman is all over this album, and I've talked about MJ a few times on this podcast and being a fan of him, so I'm glad to see him enter the Waxahachie fold. We've talked a little bit about this album this week, so I know you're not as into it as I am, and I want to hear you talk about that, but I also want to talk about the overall career of Katie Crutchfield and Waxahachie, you know, going back to 2012, the first Waxahachie record, American Weekend. I did an interview with Katie this week, and we talked about the entire discography of Waxahachie. I had her talk a bit about each album. And just going through it like that, it was very interesting because she has had one of the more fascinating evolutions in indie rock over the past, you know, decade plus. For those who don't know, the early Waxahachie records are quite different from the last two. She really started out making these noisy DIY indie rock records. I think in particular, like Cerulean Salt, which came out in 2013, and then you had Ivy Trip in 2015. Those two albums I really liked revisiting when I was doing this piece because of the noisiness of those records. And there's almost like this 90s aesthetic, very kind of Pavement, Guided by Voices type feel. And I think it's very natural to split her catalog up into pre-Brad Cook and post-Brad Cook. And Katie did that herself in the interview. Like, that was the first thing that she said. She said, like, I look at my catalog as pre-Brad and post-Brad. And it was pretty obvious talking to her that she prefers the post-Brad. I wouldn't say she's dismissive of those early Waxahachie records, but I think she said, this is a quote, I feel like I figured it out on these last two albums. And I thought that was an interesting statement, because I feel like there's probably some people who would disagree with that. And maybe you're one of those people. Again, I like the last two Waxahachie records. I mean, St. Cloud, I think, is a great record. Tiger's Blood, I think, is like a little less good, but it's a really strong album. But where are you at? Where are you at with Waxahachie? And do you feel like she has figured it out, or do you like those earlier, noisier records?
So, you know, my first, I want to talk about like this really fun experience I had with Waxahachie prior, like in the pre-Brad era. Like, I was at Coachella one year, and I remember seeing this, this kind of younger looking, very indie coded woman in front of me, and she had on her arm a tattoo of the album cover from Rilo Kiley's The Execution of All Things. And, you know, I just like, hey, that's like a really cool tattoo. Turns around, it's like, oh, that's Katie Crutchfield. How about that? Like, I think they were playing Coachella that year. And so, you know, naturally, someone who's going to have a Rilo Kiley tattoo is going to make music that I enjoy when they're doing more kind of the indie rock thing rather than the, you know, wised up Americana bit. So, prior to St. Cloud, I found that I liked Waxahachie a couple of songs at a time. I liked La Luz from Ivy Trip, Silver from Into the Storm, Coast to Coast, Breathless, a lot of songs I liked, but they tended to be the atypical ones. I also felt like this was an artist I'd probably like more if I were in college or something, if I was just having like a messier sort of life. I remember saying Cerulean Salt reminds me of having roommates, which, you know, a lot of people didn't appreciate. But, I figured in 2018 when I saw them open for Jawbreaker, which may not be the friendliest crowd, but I figured that Waxahachie was probably going to go the way of, say, like a Frankie Kosmos, like a sort of indie rock songwriter that was, you know, kind of peaked in the mid-2010s and, you know, went on to make like respected records, but perhaps not an A-lister. And, you know, St. Cloud, boy, that's like a real right time, right place record. You know, it's associated with the pandemic, but I don't see it in the same light as, say, like Fetch the Bolt Cutters or Punisher, which were more prone to Twitter performance. I think it really integrated Katie's, you know, story of getting sober and just kind of finding serenity and peace through the shittiest time of her life. And I think a lot of people really needed that kind of record in early 20 and throughout 2020. And also the fact that, you know, Lucinda Williams had been like a major, major, major influence on indie rock leading up to it, but she leaned into her Southern roots and really made that comparison stick. And so I think that St. Cloud for her, and, you know, the album cover is fucking awesome. It really presented Waxahachie as like a total package, like her putting on a show in the way the previous ones hadn't. And it really just elevated her career to like this new level.
I also think that it was the kind of record that an artist makes when they want to put together a sustained career. Like, you were talking about how when you saw her in the 2010s and you felt like, well, this is going to be an indie rock band that has their moment now, but they're going to fade a little bit. And when you listen to those 2010 records, you know, like American Weekend, she made when she was 21 years old. And it sounds like a record that someone would make when they're 21 years old. It's a very young person's record, I think, mostly in the best sense. I mean, just the intensity of it, the rawness of it. And then as she grew to more of a band type outfit, again, making those noisy, kind of chaotic records. I mean, when you listen to those records, I feel like you can hear the substance abuse on those records. There is a sort of lack of clarity with those records. And in a way, I mean, like, the lack of clarity is like what I like about those records. I like how messy they are. Again, like the 90s sort of aesthetic there going on, I think, is a really appealing part of albums like Ivy Trip. I mean, Ivy Trip was an album that I remember liking at the time, But when I revisited it for this piece, I found myself really loving it. I think that's a really kind of underrated record in her discography. And then you get to St. Cloud, and you feel the clarity. I mean, it's there in the vocals. The vocals are much more prominent. The melodies, I think, are allowed to breathe a lot more. I mean, she talked in our interview about how she's always had this inclination to write poppy melodies. And when she was younger, she felt like she had to obscure that because, you know, it's not a very sort of punk rock thing to do, like to write these kind of very almost like country music type melodies and hooks that were part of her past. And she has that also in her voice as well. But it seemed like she was trying to conceal that maybe early in her career. And then St. Cloud was about embracing that and really leaning into it. And again, I think it's the type of record, and this is also true of Tiger's Blood, where, you know, it's easier to be a person in your 30s making this kind of record. You know, like if you look at someone like Lucinda Williams, or she's also talked about Tom Petty being another influence. Like these are the kinds of records like that those artists would have made too. You know, like you can't make the sort of in your bedroom intense record when you're like 33, 34. I don't think it hits the same way. You know, if you don't allow yourself to grow up a little bit, it ends up becoming a caricature, I think, a little bit. So, and she's talked about this in interviews, kind of like leaning into getting older a little bit and embracing that on the record. And it's something that I've really enjoyed as a fan of her music, and I like the journey that she's been on. But I could see people who love those early records maybe not vibing on this stuff because it doesn't have, again, that sort of chaotic quality that those early records had. And if that's what you came here for, you're not going to be responding to these, again, more sort of straightforward, clear, craftsman-like records that she's been making lately.
Yeah, I use the term like craftsman, and I think that there's a lot of talk like that around, like, around this record of like craft and construction and like sage truth telling. And, you know, everything I said about St. Cloud, I can believe it as a music critic. I can say that objectively. And still, when I remember trying to get into it in 2020 and hearing what other people did and probably want to listen to something else by the end of it. And I can acknowledge that's like a me thing. Yeah, I thought that it was just too tasteful. And I know that, like, that's, again, that's a me thing. But, you know, the reason that this was my number one pick, like my, I wouldn't trade it for the Beyonce album pick, is that she's basically running it back with way more career momentum, I think, than she had in 2020, which is why I find myself like more frustrated by this record than I am with St. Cloud, because, you know, I've read the many profiles, you know, it's all Pitchfork Oral History and Waxahachie profiles right now. And I read the lyrical quotes and I'm thinking, yeah, that's a well-constructed lyric. I get what she's getting at. And yet when I listen to the record, it's so tasteful to me. You know, see, I don't get gut-wrenching. Okay.
Look, that's such a music critic word. I mean, I love that. I mean, look, I know what you mean. I know what you're saying. Yeah. You feel like it's really pretty and well made, but it doesn't make you feel anything. I think that's what you mean when you say that, right? Like you can recognize that it's well made, but it doesn't hit you in an emotional place.
And yeah, like I read the lyrics and I'm like, okay, I can see where she's getting at. And like when I'm like, but when I'm done listening to Tiger's Blood, which is enjoyable, the melodies are great, the vocal performances are great, I'm like, I don't exactly know what is trying to get put across.
Well, I mean, can a song just be a great song though? Like, I just feel like, sure. I just feel like she's writing great songs. I mean, I know what you mean, but I don't think that music just has to be this sort of like young person, adolescent, like angst fest. You know, if that's what music has to be, I'm sorry. Like, then you have to stop making records when you turn 30, you know, because that kind of thing just, I don't think it scans as authentic once you reach a certain age. You know, there's a certain thing that you can do when you're 21 that if you do it when you're 31, it just seems forced. And if you don't allow yourself to grow up a little bit and embrace other forms of expression, then you're going to stagnate. you know? So I don't know. I mean, you can't really argue with someone who's like, I don't feel anything from this. I mean, because you either feel it or you don't. But I don't know. I feel like she opens herself up a lot in her music. And what her earlier records had in terms of intensity, I think that her later records have in terms of just improved craft. And look, craft is like an underrated thing. It's not very sexy, you know? It's someone who's just really good at what they do. But I'm impressed by that. I get a lot from that. And just like the songwriting, I think, is really top notch on this record. So that's where, like, I would be.
Can you call it underrated if this album is probably going to be like album of the year, or at least top three for pretty?
No, I didn't call the album underrated. I said craft is underrated.
Oh, okay.
Because craft, because again, like, you use words like, music critics use words like tasteful, or they might say, oh, this is musical comfort food. That's my least favorite phrase, by the way. If I see musical comfort food in a review, I am deleting the review from my mind, because it's such a, like, condescending thing to say about a record. To say that, like, because people, they usually use that term to describe a certain kind of guitar rock. And yeah. It's really implying that, like, it's easy to make that kind of music. That it's really easy to make, like, a likable, well-made, melodic, catchy record. When that's really hard. It's really hard to make a record like that that's good. Because there are so many different kinds of records like that. So if you can make a record that is melodic, catchy, has great instrumental tones on it, and it just works, that's not easy to do. So, like, to call it musical comfort food, like, oh, this is just, like, someone just, like, crapped this out. It's not challenging. It's just blah, blah, blah. It's like, look, any kind of music you like is comfort food. Even if it's, like, a guy screaming into a microphone and, you know, doing all the usual sort of, like, punk rock moves. Like, that's comfort food to a lot of people. Even if people might say, oh, it's more challenging or abrasive or emotional or whatever. Like, people who like that kind of music like other records like that. So it's comforting to them. So you could describe any kind of music as comfort food. Anyway, that's my rant on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's like, it's so funny how, you know, people who are like into Idols or like into, you know, Steve Albini type. There's a new Shellac record being announced this week. And yeah, there's a lot of music in that realm where it recreates like something that people were doing in 1992, but people still assume that it's just as challenging and abrasive as it was back then. Like, comfort food is an eye of the beholder thing. And I think just to kind of round out like the conversation here on Waxahachie, like, I do like it. Like, if I think of it as like, again, I don't want to like undermine what Tom Petty does, but Tom Petty songs, when I hear them on the radio, you know, it doesn't give me this profound spiritual experience, but I'm like, oh, that's a good song. And yet I think I'm maybe more frustrated with the framework of this record, because it always gets called like gut-wrenching or sage truth-telling. And like, I want that. I want to feel that. But, you know, I can say that, like, I believe everything people say about the way they feel about this record, if that makes sense. Like, I don't think people are being conned. I don't think, it's just a sort of, yeah, I can appreciate this, and, you know, I'm probably going to listen to the Frail Body record instead, or the Knocked Loose record more this year, because I go to the gym a lot. So, yeah.
Well, and Knocked Loose, that's comfort music for people who like that kind of music, you know, for people who want to go to the gym. That's your comfort music, that's, or your comfort food or whatever. So, you know, in our conversation about this record this week, it was funny because you said that the Waxahachie record is actually your number three singer-songwriter record that's coming out this week, which I thought was a pretty funny thing to say. And quite honestly, it's probably my second favorite singer-songwriter record of the week, because my number one singer-songwriter record that's coming out this week would be Bite Down by Rosalie, which I think is one of my favorite albums of the year. I interviewed Rosalie last week. You could still read that on UpRocks. I've talked a little bit about this record already, but you know, Rosalie, she was a singer-songwriter. She was based in Philadelphia for a long time, but now she's in North Carolina. She's had some connection to the War on Drugs. Actually, like, the first time I heard her sing was on a War on Drugs bootleg from 2019. She just has, like, one of the best voices, I think, of anyone right now. Just an incredible singer. Really good singer-songwriter. The last two records that she's made has been with this great band from Omaha, Nebraska, David Nance and Mode Sound. And I've described this record as like Sandy Dennis jamming with Crazy Horse. Like, it's a beautiful sounding singer with like a really kind of raw rocking band backing her up. And then, of course, there's the Adrienne Linker record, which is out today, Bright Future. And I know you're a big fan of that record, right? Is that your favorite singer-songwriter record of the March 23rd sweepstakes or March 22nd sweepstakes?
Yeah, do your homework. We also have Kenny Chesney and Maynard James Keenan albums out this week and Gary Clark Jr. So, I do like the Adrienne Linker one a lot. And it's an interesting tie-in to the way you described like Waxahachie's earlier albums being more raw and 90s and indie. And Adrienne Linker's it sounds kind of demo-y. There are a couple of songs where you can hear like the tape machine calibrating, and it's a lot stranger than I expected, because, you typically think like, or at least even based on the previous Adrienne Linker albums, that they'd be like really raw and stripped down. And this one is, but it has this, it keeps me kind of off balance. Especially with like the first song, Real House. It's 6 minutes and just gets into very, devastating lyrics about her upbringing. And yeah,
there's like a lot of weirdness on Big Thief records, though, too. I mean, I don't think that's like a new thing to this album.
No, but it's just interesting to, especially with the last Big Thief record, it was a little more jam bandy. You have a song like Spud Infinity. But this one is just kind of more kind of studio tinkering, very idiosyncratic. And the songs are just really great as well. I like the Rosalie record too. That's like, I thought it was sort of like that Weather Station record from a few years back, but like more up-tempo and rock and less about like climate change, I guess. But these are both good. I mean, like all three of these records come from a very different angle, even if you might want to consider it all kind of rootsy singer-songwriter indie-approved albums. It's a real boom time for people who fall under that umbrella.
Yeah, I mean, the Adrienne Linker record I like, but it's similar to her other solo records where I feel like these are demos for a Big Thief album that's never going to get made. I just like her working in the framework of Big Thief. I think that band adds an extra dimension to her songs that they don't have on the solo records. As good as the songs are on here, I just feel like, man, I wish she was with the band playing these songs. I think that they would sound better. Because she is essentially on her own on this record. I don't think there is really any other instrumentation for the most part. I mean, it's basically voice, guitar, and like you said, some studio things going on.
There are guests. She does have other musicians on this record, but it's pretty stripped down in that. It's not like a Waxahachie record or Rosalie.
Yeah, it's not a band record. And it's not her working with Big Thief. And, again, like Big Thief is a vehicle for her songs, but I do think that band, I mean, they just work so well together and they really bring something else out, I think, in her songs that she doesn't have on the solo record. So, like, for me, I like the record, but there's a part of me that just wishes that, oh, bring these to Big Thief. They could take this to a different place. But look, I'd rather have more Adrienne Linker music than less. So, if she's going to do solo records along with Big Thief records, we all win out. So I'm glad she's doing it.
Yeah. And that's going to happen. Like, this band cannot stop making music. So,
well, I mean, for their last record, New Worm Dragon, I Believe in You. I mean, they reportedly recorded like 45 songs and they only released 20 of them. So, there's like 25 songs or so sitting in a vault somewhere. I don't know if they're ever going to come out or not, but I mean, they could load that up at any moment. We could have a Big Thief. We could have a Big Thief record for our fantasy draft in the spring for all we know. We don't know. Because like this Adrienne Linker record, I think it was announced after our draft because I feel like one of us would have picked it. I'm almost positive this album was announced right after we drafted. And maybe that would have been the difference for me. If I could have picked Adrienne Linker, maybe she could have saved my season. Adrienne, why didn't you announce earlier? Adrienne, please.
I don't think it was for the original draft, but I do think it was when both of us got a chance to, you know, replace stuff, like with you, a Serpent with Feet. And, you know, right now it's clocking in at 87. I don't think it would totally turn the tide, but it would make it seem a little bit more close. These are like the, you know, when you're bombing threes in garbage time and making the score seem less of a blowout than it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I would love to see. I would love a Big Thief album in our fantasy draft. I would love, like, you know, it's only a 2-person draft, so we can't like trade up, or maybe we can. I don't know. We introduce trades to the next one.
I don't know. I wonder where we're at with Big Thief at this moment. You know, that last album was so acclaimed, but I know that there's people that, you know, just lose their minds anytime there's like a Big Thief band photo that comes out. You know, like, they're like an easy target for mockery, I think. So I don't know if there's going to be a backlash against that band. I mean, if they do release The Leftovers from New Warm Dragon, I Believe in You, are those going to be great songs, or are they going to sound like Leftovers? Or are they just going to leave those in a vault and record a whole other album? I mean, who knows what's going to happen, but I'm excited to find out. Let's get to our mailbag here. We haven't done a mailbag. I don't think we did one last week. We ran out of time. Oh, no, we did. Did we do a mailbag last week?
I think we did like one question.
Man, I cannot remember a goddamn thing about any of our episodes. I'm getting concerned about my memory at this point.
We're like Big Thief in that way. We just like put out so much material. It's just hard to sort through
it. I guess. I don't know. I just feel like a senile old podcast host here. Thank you all for writing in. It's always great to hear from our listeners. You can hit us up at indycastmailbag@gmail.com. We have two letters this week. You want to read our first one, Ian?
Yes, I do. All right. So I'm glad I'm reading this question because it's really one posed to you and only you. So this comes from Andrew in Minneapolis.
Ooh.
First off.
Wow.
Yeah. So, Steven, I've been wondering, how do your neighbors feel about your patio music? Maybe this is one of your neighbors.
Wow. Yeah, maybe Andrew. Andrew, do you live in my neighborhood? Are you hearing the tunes from my patio? Are you in, do you want to come over and hang out? Or are you annoyed by the music? I might need a follow-up from Andrew on this. My neighbors love the patio music. I'm really good friends with our neighbors. Very lovely couple. Two beautiful kids that my kids like to play with. In my adult life, I've never had neighbors that I liked. I've always had weird neighbors. what I mean is that, like, in most cases, I didn't even know who they were. You know, like, I didn't get to know them really. When I lived in Milwaukee, I had an insane neighbor who we worried might break into the house and, you know, murder us. But here it's great. I only have like one neighbor because I live on the corner. So I've got like the, you know, I got the side yard here, and then got the street, and then you get the neighbors to our right, and they're fantastic. I know my neighbor Josh; he's very amused by my silver CD boombox. When I got that out and I'm playing tapes, I think he's very amused by this that I'm playing tapes. And I'm like, tapes are coming back, son. I'm leading the charge. See, this is why you got to move to the Midwest, Ian. Because you can sit on the patio, play music with your neighbors, have some drinks. It's a great time. Because you're in San Diego, beautiful weather, but like, don't you live like in a building or something?
Yeah, I live in a condo complex, my wife and I. So like, having neighbors means something very different in the Midwest than it does in San Diego or, you know, like LA or what have you. Because like, my neighbors, like, I like literally share walls with some of them. And so, yeah, it's an interesting mix of people because where I live, you have, you know, people like my wife and I, and then you have, you know, like some non-traditional families where you'll see like cousins and aunts and whatnot cycling out. And then there's people in their 50s and 60s who have lived here for like 30 years and are like really just hanging on. And then you got like San Diego, like condos full of San Diego State students whose parents bought them it for the semester. I'm like 5 minutes from campus. And so I'm like so lucky in the place I live right now because I don't think any of my neighbors like music. I'll walk like 2 minutes to the left and there'll be people who are like blasting the shit out of Bad Bunny at like 9 o'clock on a Wednesday, kind of similar to the way I was when I was in college. So I've thought back a lot on how I treated or was completely inconsiderate of my neighbors when I was, 22 years old. Of course, then again, I'm thinking, I live in a college town. People have to expect that you're going to have obnoxious neighbors. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I'm a headphones listener pretty much 90 to 95% of the time anyway. So I don't know. I'd like lay out on the lawn with my headphones, but I don't think I would, include my neighbors in, me kind of sipping a drink and listening to the new Knocked Loose.
Yeah. See, it's so crazy to me though, because you live in San Diego, which I feel like would be like patio heaven, because it's always like 78 degrees there. You got perfect weather all year round. It's like that Twilight Zone episode where the guy who loves to read, there's like an apocalypse and he finally has time to read all those books and then his glasses break. You know what I'm talking about? Have you seen this episode?
Yeah. Yeah. But there's like May gray and June gloom, which are real. Yeah, so for like two straight months, it's great. No, I mean, it's very real. But the problem is,
it's 68 degrees.
Yeah, the problem is, it's like, yeah, it would be great to have porches, but like there's no land. None of us have yards. None of us have basements. Very few of us have porches. And so, that's like kind of the trade-off. They call it the sunshine tax.
It's too nice, so you have no room. That's why you gotta live in a place worse weather. You have like the space of a king. It's amazing. So that's why I take the worst weather. I like to have the space, but I can see it would be nice to be in San Diego as well. I'll read the second letter. This comes from Tim from New York, and then he put Manhattan in parentheses. So Tim Manhattan, here we go. That's your new name. You're Tim Manhattan or Manhattan.
That's the guy Bruno Mars owes money.
Tim Manhattan is on the line. He's got two big hitmen with him. You better pay Tim Manhattan. How about Timmy Manhattan? I like Timmy Manhattan more than Tim Manhattan. Or Timothy Manhattan?
That's a good one.
Maybe.
Yeah, Timmy. We're going to go with Timmy.
Timmy Manhattan. Here we go. Big fan of the pod. Thank you. Thought of this question when I was in this situation earlier today. You're sitting on a plane on the tarmac about to take off. The flight attendant tells you that the Wi-Fi is not working. You only have time to download 3 albums from Spotify, or it doesn't have to be Spotify. It could be any streaming platform, to listen to on your flight. What albums do you choose? Here's what I went with. Grown Backwards by David Byrne. I don't know that album.
I've never heard of it.
I'm not up on David Byrne solo albums. Microcastle by Deer Hunter. I do know that album. And In Rainbows by Radiohead. I know that album as well. 3 comfort albums that for me are endlessly re-listenable. So I think he's asking us, what 3 albums would we download if we were on an airplane? I just want to say I love this question, by the way, and I immediately had answers for it because I've been in this situation before. But how about you, Ian? Is this relatable to you, this scenario?
Absolutely, because I've been thinking about this with, our upcoming trip to Europe. And like, I've not been on a flight, like an international flight, since I was 17 years old. And I had like, the Case Logic sleeve of CDs, and somehow I got by. But, typically when I'm on an airplane, I have like 20 years worth of hour-long mixes already downloaded on Apple Music. I write about them at my Substack, iancohen.substack.com. I recommend you check it out.
Good plug.
Good plug. You're not the only one who's got a plug here. When I think about like airplane albums, I just cannot sleep on an airplane for extended periods of time. Like, it doesn't matter if I'm doing a red eye or leaving at 6 in the morning, which is, when the vast majority of flights leave in San Diego. I can sleep for like 30 minutes at a time. So the ones that really hit the spot for me in this situation are, they have to be like kind of quiet and pretty enough where I can, doze off for a while, but like not ambient enough where I'd be like bored out of my skull and frustrated that I can't sleep. So I would group these into albums that are like typically 70 to 80 minutes in length, because I wouldn't typically listen to them unless I'm a captive audience. Like, I can't listen to these in my car. I can't listen to these when I'm like doing notes at work. And the first one that came to mind, and I'll do this with all the requisite qualifiers about the person's quality as a person, but, you know, Sun Kill Moon's April, pretty much perfect for that scenario. It's like 10 songs, 80 minutes. Most of the songs are about travel and just gorgeous music from a very ugly person. But in that realm, I'd also include Yola Tango's and Nothing Turned Itself Inside Out.
Mm.
And also, I know it's not the first three Sigur Rós albums because Vaughn is technically their first, but any of the, you know, Agueda's Bergeon, the one with the embryo, the one with the fetus on the cover, or the parenthetical album, or Tack. These are albums I can't really listen to, you know, in my car or at work because they're so fucking long and also a little sleepy. But if I'm on a plane, they are really, really good in that regard. So, yeah, it can't be any, and it has to be something I'm familiar with as well. So we're like kind of putting this in between 2000 and 2008.
Okay, so for me, okay, I'm going to split this up into different parts of the travel experience. My number one album to listen to when I'm at the airport and I'm walking through the terminal is Stories from the City, Stories from the Sea by PJ Harvey. I don't know why, but I always want to listen to this album when I'm walking through the terminal to my gate. And usually I'm listening to like the first bunch of songs. So Big Exit, Good Fortune. I might skip ahead to This Is Love. Basically all the hits off that record, but sometimes I'll just let the album run through. That's just such a great airport album. I don't know why. I can't explain it. There's really no airport, overtones explicitly on that record. I just love it as an airport album. So that's my airport album. If I'm on the plane, I'm seated, getting ready to take off. And like usually I don't pay for the airplane Wi-Fi, so I'm already going into airplane mode on my phone. So like now I am going into the downloaded albums. Steely Dan Gaucho and or Donald Fagen's The Nightfly. Great. Great albums. If you're on an airplane, you're in this sort of like recycled air environment. It feels a little unnatural. And I feel like Steely Dan Gaucho, it's a recycled air, very unnatural environment type record. So perfect for that. So now we're in the air. And maybe I'm like, I want to order a drink here. I'm going to order like a Jack Daniels on the rocks. I have a Stevie Ray Vaughan live album from 1983. Which
that's the stuff.
I think it's a bootleg. It's like from Ripley's. I think it's in Philadelphia. That is the ultimate. I'm drinking Jack Daniels on the rocks from a plastic cup on an airplane album. Just great airplane music. Stevie Ray Vaughan, 1983. I think it's a bonus disc on the reissue of Texas Flood, the first Stevie Ray Vaughan album. Great live album. So those are my three picks. I guess 3/4, because I'm getting The Nightfly in there as well. But yeah, I love this question. The downloaded albums, you know, I usually am downloading the night before the trip because I want to soundtrack it. Like, what am I into? But I do have albums that are just on my phone for this very situation.
I don't know if I've like ever felt like more... I mean, I'm like quoting the one Stevie Ray Vaughan song I know, Pride and Joy. But yeah, I love the fact that we're doing SRV cast. Oh my God, man. Like, oh, we're getting into guitar world type music.
Dude,
we're
gonna, you have no idea.
We're going to get some fucking Derek Trucks up in this shit.
You like, have no idea like, how excited I would be to do an SRV cast. That might be next, baby. We'll see.
I've read way too many Guitar World and Guitar Magazine features in the 90s to not know stuff about Stevie Ray Vaughan, even though I've like never, ever listened to his music. Like, I know Pride and Joy. I know that one of the two Pearl Jam guitarists, I think it was Mike McCready. Was he the one dressing up like Stevie Ray Vaughan early on?
Oh, yeah.
Or was that Stone? Yeah.
No.
Okay,
cool. That was McCready with like, yeah, the flower, like the billowy shirts and the scarves. And
the vest.
In the hat. Yeah. Perfect. Dude, Stevie Ray Vaughan, big fan. Love Stevie Ray Vaughan. SRV cast coming your way very soon. We've now reached the part of our episode that we call Recommendation Corner, where Ian and I talk about something that we're into this week. Ian, you go first.
All right, Steve, I don't know if, like, there are times where you get promos and the recommended if you like list just seems, like, way too tailored to your taste, where it just is, like, unbelievable. And so I got one recently where it said, Built to Spill, Cap and Jazz, Alex G, The Microphones, Radio Department, Modest Mouse, Broken Social Scene. I don't know how a band could all sound like that, but this is in reference to the new Bedbug album, Pack Your Bags, The Sun is Growing. And, like, it actually is true. This is an album that I've really gotten into over the past couple of weeks. It came out on the 15th. It's, you know, getting pretty well received amongst people who check for this music. They've been kicking around the indie sphere of, you know, they're not from Philly, but they kind of sound like it, sort of thing. And yeah, this reminds me most of all of early The World is a Beautiful Place and I'm No Longer Afraid to Die. It has that quality of being like very like handcrafted, but ramshackle. The songs go in very interesting directions. The vocals will probably annoy some people, but they work for me. And you can just see like the kind of community and love that went into this album. It's a nice compliment to, and I say this as a compliment, like the well-crafted stuff we've talked about earlier in the episode. This to me just strikes as like sprawling indie rock that I love so much. I've seen comparisons to early Modest Mouse as well. If you, this is basically Ian Cohen recommendation corner core. And if that means anything to you, I think you'll like this record as well.
You think there are bands just making records to end up in recommendation corner? Like they've gamed it out where they know, okay, this is the kind of shit Ian goes for. This is the kind of shit that Steve goes for. I mean, probably not, but maybe there is one band out there that is in the lab just working on recommendation corner rock, you know, because they know what we like. That'd be amazing.
Oh, there is a new Restoration album out this week, too. So I think we have to mention that because it's pretty down the pike for us.
Oh, my God. Restorations. Yeah, we got to definitely shout them out. Got to check out that record. Really good record. It sounds like they haven't been gone at all. You know, first album in 10 years, I think.
18. They had an album come out in 18.
Okay, first album in 6 years. Long time. And that album is called Restorations. So, you know, look it up. It's called Restorations. It'll probably say the year next to it, so you know which album we're talking about. But really good album. I'm going to put that in my recommendation corner, along with the other choice that I had this week. And you could call this musical comfort food, if you will. But the Bruce Springsteen archival site, he's got he's set up on nugs.net. He's posting his most recent shows. He also posts classic shows from the past. And I think he did this last week. He posted a show from September 21st, 1978, the third show of his all-time classic run at the Capitol Theater, Passaic, New Jersey. The show from, I think it's September 19th, is widely regarded as maybe like one of the best, if not the best, Springsteen shows of all time. This show is also phenomenal, and it's also in just pristine soundboard sound. Sounds incredible. If you haven't dipped into Bruce Springsteen bootlegs before, this is a great place to start. It's a phenomenal show. If you are a fan, if you're ahead, you probably have this already. It's just a fantastic thing. Again, go to Springsteen. Just look up live Springsteen downloads on Google. It'll take you to the nugs.net website. Download this. Listen to it. Enjoy it. Play it on your patio. Invite your neighbor Josh and his wife Vanessa over, listen to some beautiful music on the patio. It'll be outstanding.
Is there crossover between patio music and plane music? Because like I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, man, is this going to make my flight a little more epic, or do I need to like get on the porch with it? Like maybe we can spend another episode sorting that out.
I think there's some crossover because you're sitting down, you want to be relaxed. I think that the patio thing is the music is in the air. It's not just in your headphones. So like Sigur Rós, for instance, I don't know if you're going to play that on the patio, but like you might play, PJ Harvey on the patio. That could work, especially that album. That's her most patio friendly record, I would say. Stories from the City, Stories from the Sea. But anyway, yes, we can pick that up in our next episode along with SRV Cast, which I'm very excited about. Thank you all for listening to this episode of IndieCast. We'll be back with more news, reviews, and hashing out trends next week. And if you're looking for more music recommendations, sign up for the Indie Mixtape newsletter. You can go to uproxx.com/indie, and I recommend 5 albums per week, and we'll send it directly to your email box.